heavens declare the glory of God. The sky proclaims the work of his hands. That's how King David starts Psalm 19, the glory of God. And that's what I want you and me to contemplate together this morning, specifically the glory of God as it relates to the resurrection of Jesus on this beautiful Easter morning. But what is glory? Well, it's one of those words that we tend to throw around a lot in church, but I'm not really sure we know what it means. And so I've been spending a lot of time in these past couple weeks thinking about the concept of glory. And you know, I've decided that some words are just harder than others to define. Have you ever noticed that? Take the word, the idea of basketball, for instance. You watching March Madness? Basketball is a pretty easy definition. I can describe to you the orange ball that's used. I can tell you the rules of the game. I can even give a little bit of the history of the game and how it came about. And after our conversation, you can go down the street and you see kids on a playground bouncing an orange ball, throwing it in a hoop with a net, and you know basketball when you see it. You see kids on the playground next door throwing an oblong brown ball back and forth. You know that's not basketball. Pretty easy concept. But beauty, take beauty for instance. Beauty's not as easy to define. I don't know that I can put beauty into words for you. You and I can walk around together, and I can point to it, and I can show it to you. I can say, there's beauty. That's beautiful. That's beauty. I can show you a painting, not all paintings. I can play you a song, not all songs. And if we spend enough time doing that, then you're going to begin to get the concept of beauty, or at least my understanding of beauty. Putting beauty into words, though, is just all but impossible. And the same thing, I think, is true with this idea of the glory of God. I think I can point to it. I think I could show it to you, but I don't know that I could define it for you. And so I'm going to try it this way. In the Bible, two words tend to go together, glory and holy. They're often traveling companions. If you find one, you find the other very close by. Holy, we understand. We in the church, we get it. Holy means something is set apart. Holy describes the perfection of God. Holy describes that he is without fault, that he is great, that he is set apart from everything else in the universe. I would say that holy describes how awesome God is, except the 80s kind of ruined that word for us. But awesome, it's a good word. One theologian says that holy describes the fact that God is one of a kind in the universe. So when Isaiah the prophet is given a vision of heaven and he's standing before the throne of God and he sees the angels around the throne and he hears them singing, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." Now we might have expected to hear those angels say, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his holiness." But that's not what we heard. The whole earth is full of his glory. And so what we learn from that is that God's glory is the manifestation of his holiness. God's glory is the expression of his holiness. If God's holiness, his perfection, is his inward quality, how he shows that outwardly is his glory. Holy is what he is. Glory is what we see of God. God is perfect. That's his holiness. How he shows us his perfection, that's his glory. Consider the statement in Leviticus 10, verse 3. "I will show my holiness, declares the Lord, to those who are near me, and I will reveal my glory before all the people." Glory is the manifestation of God's perfection. Glory is God's acting out his holiness. And the languages in the Bible show that as well. In the Old Testament, the word for glory is the Hebrew word kavod, and it means abundant, it means riches, it means glory and honor. But originally, it meant weight, as in how much you weigh. So you imagine a man in the ancient Near East, and you see him coming to you on a camel. How do you know this man is wealthy? How do you know this man is important? Well, it's not because he tells you. But you see it. You see his wealth. You see his importance because he's wearing rich, heavy robes. And he's carrying bags of money. Back then, of course, they didn't have money that was in bills or credit cards or anything like that. It was all weighted. And so literally, the wealthier you were, the heavier it weighed. And so if you see this man, his glory is his weight. It's the manifestation of his wealth. You can just tell by looking at him that he's a wealthy man. And so the Hebrews took that analogy and they ascribed it to the Lord. And they said, his one-of-a-kind nature in the universe is seen by his weight, by his glory. In the Greek, it's the same way, or it's similar at least. The Greek word for glory is doxa, and that literally means brightness or radiance, shining. Again, if you're thinking about an earthly king, how do you see his glory? Well, you see it in the splendor of his raiment. You see it in his accoutrements. You see it in his robes. You see it in his rings. You see it in the crown on his head. He's shining. He's glorious. The same is true with God. Glory is his outward manifestation of who he is. His inner perfection is shown outwardly. That's glory. And I still don't think I'm doing a good job defining it for you. But there's one other thing that I want you to see, one characteristic that I think is important for us to understand. And that is, glory is meant to be shared. Glory is meant to be shared. Think about it for a minute. Why would God care about showing off his holiness if there were no one to show it to? And God knows he's one of a kind in the universe. He doesn't have to tell himself that. And so he wants to share his glory, his perfection. He wants to show his glory, but in order for him to show it, there must be someone to see it. There must be someone to recognize it. There must be someone to appreciate it. There must be someone to whom he can share it with. And so God created the universe. Psalm 19, 1 through 5, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour out speech. Night after night they communicate knowledge. There's no speech, there are no words, their voice is not heard. Their message has gone out to all of the earth, and their words to the ends of the inhabited world. In the heavens he has pitched a tent. For the sun, it is like the groom coming from the bridal chamber. It rejoices like an athlete running a course. King David says that the galaxies, the sun, the moon, the stars, sunsets over oceans, moon rises over mountain lakes, canyons, waterfalls, all shout the glory of God. The beauty of God's creation, this world that we live in, the beauty of his creation shows the perfection of the Creator. It screams to us that there is a perfect creator behind it. But there was no one to hear it. And so God created us. Again, King David, Psalm 8. What is man that you're mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings. You crowned him with glory and honor. You made him ruler over the works of your hands. You put everything under his feet. God is perfect. He's flawless. And we've been put on this planet to see it. We've been put on this planet to appreciate that glory, that perfection of God. Now, with the creation of Adam and Eve, there was someone on the earth to see the stars and praise God. There was someone on the earth to watch that sunrise and give thanks. There was someone on the earth to see those sunsets and waterfalls and draw close in their hearts to the Creator who made them. God even saw fit, David reminds us here, that God even saw fit to share some of that perfection with us, to share his glory with us. We actually are an exhibition of his glory. In fact, when God made us, we were the crowning act of his creation. We, in a sense, are the manifestation of his glory. Now, mind you, it's just a sliver. It's a tiny sliver. It's the image of God. We're not God, but we've been made in his image. He even thought enough of us to give us, as King David reminded us, to give us dominion over this glorious world that he's created. He made us for fellowship. He made us to share his glory, to appreciate his glory, to know his glory. But in our sin, we set aside God's glory for our own. That little sliver of glory he gave us, we elevated and downplayed the glory of the one who made us. We experienced the glory of God in creation, but we never looked past the creation to see the Creator. We started worshiping the creation itself. We started worshiping ourselves. We set ourselves up as gods. We set ourselves up as laws unto ourselves, all to the detriment of God's glory in the universe. How long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? The Lord asks. How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Paul describes it in the New Testament regarding them. The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the glory, the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. It's one of the great universal ironies that the glory of God is all around us and we don't see it. We're blinded to it. It's hidden from us. But nevertheless, God speaks of his glory. He promises his glory. He promised a time when it would return again to the forefront. Isaiah 40, Isaiah prophesies, "And the glory of the Lord will appear, and all humanity will see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken." The psalmist says, "All the nations will fear the name of the Lord, and all the kings of the earth your glory." That glory is coming back. And God's people, we've been praying. We've been asking for God to manifest his glory again in the world. God, be exalted above the heavens. Let your glory be above the whole earth. Which brings us to Easter. Easter is God's glory reinstated. Now I want to be very clear for a moment. God's always been holy. He's always been perfect. He's always been set apart, one of a kind in the universe. He's never changed. He's never acted in a way to contradict his perfection. And he's always exhibited that holiness outwardly. He doesn't keep it to himself. So God's always been glorious. But like I say, we've chosen not to look. We've been blinded by the enemy. We've misappropriated God's glory. We've worshiped the creation instead of the Creator. But God is no longer content for the people of this planet to miss his glory any longer. No more misconceptions. No more misunderstandings. God has one final, ultimate manifestation of his glory, and that is his Son. John says that when we saw Jesus, we observed his glory. When we saw Jesus, we observed the manifestation of the perfection of God on this earth. We saw his glory, glory as the one and only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. And through his Son, the Father had one final act up his sleeve to show us once and for all his perfection, to show us once and for all his perfect love. One final act, final in an ultimate sense, one ultimate act to express his glory. God is holy, he is perfect, he wants to show once and for all the truth of that statement. How does he do it? He does it through the death and the resurrection of his Son. I want to read to you our passage this morning, Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Long ago, God spoke to the fathers by the prophets and at different times and in different ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. God has appointed him, his Son, heir of all things and made the universe through him. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact expression of his nature. sustaining all things by his powerful word. And after making purifications for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, so that he became higher in rank than all the angels, just as the name he inherited is superior to theirs. Do you see it? It's all there. God's one-of-a-kind perfection. God's glory manifest in creation. God's glory described here in his word. God's glory expressed in the radiance of the sun. When we saw Jesus, we saw the glory of God. God's glory shown by the sacrifice and the resurrection of his son. The sun is the radiance of God's glory and the exact expression of his nature, sustaining all things by his powerful word. And after making purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. I have been seeking the Lord for weeks, praying for you that you would somehow see it, that somehow I would be able to communicate this morning the glory of God to you. That you and I would awaken to the glory of God. 2,000 years ago, this very morning, Jesus walked out of that tomb, a conqueror of death, so that you might be saved. And as wonderful as that truth is, and the fact that I'm standing here before you saved by that same act, as wonderful as that truth is, what Jesus did for you and what Jesus did for me, that's not what makes this day great, what God did for you and what God did for me. You see, it's not about us. Easter is great because, as we just read in the book of Hebrews, it is the crowning act of God's glory. It was the fitting conclusion to his continued pursuit of humanity. It was the only answer, and it was the perfect sacrifice for sin. It is the visible expression for all to see. God's glory. Easter is proof once and for all of God's perfection, of his perfect love, that he would even send his son for a sinful world. If God's wonderful created world were a statement and you wrote it on the page, if you were able to describe it and write about his beautiful and wonderful creation, his glorious creation, the resurrection of Jesus would be the exclamation point on the end of it, shouting the glory of God. Everything wonderful in this universe sings of God's glory. The stars, according to the scriptures, sing of God's glory. Jesus says the rocks cry out God's glory. A newborn baby's cry is a song of God's glory. And the empty tomb is the final stanza. And they all sing the same song. God is glorious.